one of the, I guess, items of feedback from agencies was flexibility. How can you be flexible to help us make the most impact in the community? And so from that, we allowed them, if they had more than one program with us, even if they were across different focus areas. So for example, education, income, health, and community strengthening are our four focus areas. If you had an agency that had a program in health and one in community strengthening, but they felt the health program was really one of the more important ones that they do and needed that money from community strengthening, the program that they had there, to go towards the health program, we allowed for that flexibility. And so at the end of the day, then we had a handful of agencies that declined the funding overall. They just didn't feel like they necessarily needed it. And so we went from 64 programs.
Wait, they said, yeah, we're okay? Yeah. You should put that money somewhere else?
Yeah, and I don't know
who did that? What agency does that?
So the regional alternative school, they had actually decided that, you know, their programs were self-sustaining and they didn't necessarily need that money from United Way anymore because the programs that we had supported, one was a credit recovery program. I can't think of the other one right off the top of my head, Charlie, but they determined, you know what, we're in good shape with these. Let that money be kind of redistributed among
for the greater for the greater
yep.
good.
And Chestnut Health Systems is another one that did the same.
Okay. So that allowed you to give a little bit of extra money to some other places. Who got the money and which other agencies said, let's put all of our nickels on this program versus that program?
Yeah, and that's a great question. You know, so in the past 2 years, we've had 64 programs and 32 agencies. We're down now to about 48 programs and 29 agencies. So we definitely had some movement among different agencies and their programs as far as what they were funding. A great example would be the Center for Human Services. So they had three different programs that were based around mental health issues, needs in the community. And Tom Barr and his group at the Center for Human Services really decided that their one program, the medical services, was the most important one of the three. So they had one that was with transitional housing, and I forget the third one right off the top of my head.
A mental health thing? Or?
Yeah, they were all related to mental health, but they just felt like that realistically the most important and critical service that they provided among the programs. And not to say that those other two weren't critical in their minds, but at the end of the day, given the amount of money that was available, they felt it was most important to put all of that money into those mental health services for those that were most in need.
So with this two and a half year consolidation process, shrinkage process, how does the current allocation meet the United Way strategic vision as laid out in its community assessment of needs? Does that need to be reworked, and where are you in that reprioritization process that occurs every so often anyway?
Yeah, and I think that we were already kind of there, Charlie. It's just that with the amount of money that was available, we were trying to make the most impact and giving the agencies a voice in what would create that greatest impact in the community. And so a number of the programs that we already have are dealing with issues that were pointed out in that needs assessment from 2014, whether it be mental health, whether it be access to health care, transportation, etc.
So the reallocation didn't distort the community assessment of needs vision, and it didn't leave holes in what you had planned on, what you would hope to do.
Correct. I would say that I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that there weren't any holes. I would say even at the previous level of funding, when our campaigns were at $3.5 to $4 million, I would say there were still needs that probably weren't able to be funded that were pointed out in the community needs assessment. But as far as the changes that came about because of last year's fundraising campaign, it didn't create a situation where it distorted those needs that were highlighted from the community needs assessment. To your point too, I think probably sometime the next year or two, it's going to be important to provide a refresh or an update to that. Most communities try to do needs assessments every 3 to 6 years, give or take. And I think the gap between community needs assessments here in this community was around 2001 to 2014. So it was a much longer gap the last time. So that's definitely something that's on our radar, because we want to identify, to your point, are there any gaps? Are there any new needs that are popping up that weren't, you know, exactly visible or deemed critical back in 2014-15 kind of time frame.
Especially given the radically changed landscape and delivery of state-supported services.
Correct, yeah. You know, that is one of the big changes since the last time you and I had a conversation, is that there is at least some certainty. It's not necessarily the news that agencies would have wanted to hear, per se, and there's still some uncertainty about what services they provided in the past and whether or not those will be reimbursed. But at least there's a spending plan and there's a tax increase that they know will help to provide revenue for that spending plan. And I think all of that combined has helped somewhat, but I think that it's still, it is different than it was just a few years ago. And I think there is more, there's more chaos, if you will, and I think for some agencies there's also some more uncertainty moving forward of how long they can sustain, because the funding levels, both from the state, from local philanthropy, et cetera, has altered dramatically in the last few years. And I think a lot of them during the past 2 years of the budget crisis burned up a lot of reserves and lines of credit, et cetera.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with David Taylor, the CEO of the United Way of McLean County. Back in the spring, we had dealt in depth with the change in philanthropic patterns and some businesses in town choosing not to run a consolidated campaign anymore, but allowing their employees to have a menu of options on allocating their charitable dollars, and how that eroded some of the traditional support that the United Way had. And at the time, you were studying ways to address that. Mm-hmm. You now have a vision to go forward. Lay that out for us, would
you? Sure. So one of the things that we've been working on over the last year is creating a new strategic plan. And at a high level, the three priorities that we've identified are making it personal, local, and accessible, convening and coordinating resources, and ultimately the third one, attracting, educating, and retaining donors. Those are essentially, I'm simplifying a little bit, but that at its core is what we're trying to do. And, you know, right now the landscape has shifted fairly dramatically in how philanthropy is done. Look at some of the tech giants out in Silicon Valley, out in the Northwest with Amazon. They have frequently, and they have kind of really started that pattern of employee choice, employee satisfaction, and determining how different things are done in the workplace, up to and including philanthropy and how philanthropy dollars are spent, how they're matched by the company, et cetera. We've seen two local examples of that already here. State Farm Insurance has moved to an employee matching gift program. We know with that program that St. Jude and Wounded Warrior are among the two top charities of choice among the employees, and that definitely has an impact because both of those are great organizations that do great work. We know that their impact locally here may not be as significant as some organization like the Baby Fold or Project Oz or one of those other local organizations working on some local needs. Cargill also has gone to a national program similar to that, where they do an employee matching gift program that's not a specific United Way campaign. And I think that this is a trend that's not going away. This is not something that's just isolated among a few organizations. I think nationally this is more the trend and the way the winds and the landscape is shifting. And we have to really be cognizant of that and starting to figure out how we're going to connect with donors outside of the workplace. And I think that's one of the key drivers behind that first priority, if you will, within the strategic plan, is making it personal, local, and accessible. We've got a lot of local needs here that I think are needing to be met, that there are gaps in, that we want to try to address. Take, for example, there's last year that we know about, and this is just what we know about. There were 82 women between the ages of 18 to 22 that were pregnant and either ended up running away from home or being kicked out of the house as a result. Of those, 71 were turned away from services, not because they didn't qualify, but because there wasn't space, there weren't enough resources. And that's a pretty significant issue, and that's not something that can be outsourced, if you will, to another community to handle that. That's something that we have to be able to address. And
how do you make that story known and other stories like it?
Well, and that's what we're starting to do, is starting to craft those personal stories, if you will, to start to create that, I guess, sense of urgency, if you will, that there are problems here that people may not be aware of. And we're trying to work with our agency partners and others to highlight some of that. Take that example that I just gave you. It's not a single agency that can resolve that issue. And so, for example, Project Oz has the maternity group home that served those 11. So of those 82, there were 11 that were able to be served. That's all they had space for. But they're not the only ones that help with that issue. Babyfold provides prenatal counseling and care as far as how the young mothers should be preparing for their babies and for care afterwards through a program called Healthy Start. You've got the Center for Human Services that provides counseling and other supports, because it's traumatic and probably stressful to be homeless, let alone to be under 22 and pregnant and homeless. And so it's really kind of, there's this continuum of care, if you will. There's this holistic kind of approach and really a good coordination, I think, among agencies that a lot of people don't recognize on the surface. It's that hidden social infrastructure that we talked about the last time I was here. And so we're working to start educating. As we're getting into our traditional campaign season here, we've got workplace campaigns kicking off this month, next month. We're telling that story. That's one of the ones that we're highlighting to let people know there are needs in this area that are critical to be addressed. And hey, guess what? For small incremental kind of changes, we can work harder to address those. Like say, for example, if an existing donor increased their donation $15 a month, or if a new donor came in giving $15 a month, that starts to get us to that point where we can make sure those other 71 aren't without those supports.
In this fragmented eyeball world, though, where people pay attention to many different information sources rather than a traditional few, how do you reach the ones who are not part of that traditional campaign that you just mentioned?
That's a great question. And that's really part of what we're trying to accomplish, too, through our strategic plan. We were started as community chess. Like if you've ever played Monopoly and you land on the community chess space, that's the predecessor. That's the forerunner to United Way. And when that started, it was a business-to-consumer kind of a connection, a B2C. So instead of United Way coming to WGLT, it would be David Taylor as either a staff member or volunteer coming to Charlie Schlenker and saying, we'd like your support in helping these particular needs in the community. Over time, you know, United Way became very successful, and through payroll deduction, post-World War II, it became more of a business-to-business, a B2B kind of connection, to where now no longer was our relationship with Charlie as the individual, it was with the organization that he worked for. And over time, then that meant that we maybe lost control of the message, lost control of the information, and lost control of the access. And so we're working hard to reestablish those individual connections through a variety of means, including digital marketing strategies, social media, just traditional media such as this. We're going through different avenues to figure out how we can meet the donor where it's most convenient for them. That used to be the workplace. But now we know at organizations like State Farm, Cargill, and some others, as they move to more of the employee matching gift kind of mindset, we have to figure out how to connect with those donors in other places as well.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. David Taylor is the guest today. He's the CEO of the United Way of McLean County. One of the concerns is that the demographic shifts in the nation are, for instance, the millennials who have been reputed to value different things than their predecessor generations, are donating more towards cause-based philanthropy than community-based philanthropy. Are you still seeing that? Is there more information out there than there was in the spring about that particular suspected trend?
I would say that's definitely still a trend, and that's part of why we're looking at the programs that are serving those needs in the community, and we're pulling out those narratives to be able to share with people, just like we talked about with those women that are, you know, 18 to 22 and find themselves homeless and pregnant. So we're trying to find those narratives, because I think that's something very concrete. It's a need or a cause that people can recognize, that it's certainly not acceptable probably in any community, but I think in Bloomington Normal and McLean County, where we pride ourselves on quality of life and great place to raise a family, knowing that there are at least 71, and again, I'll go back to those are the ones we know about that qualified for services and couldn't get them, you know, that creates a local need and a cause I think that people can get behind. And that's just one example. And we're working through that right now, Charlie, to create those other examples, because I think people want to know how would the money be used? Not just let's give to United Way because they do good work, but we have to be accountable for what we do and demonstrate here's what we're fighting for. Here's what we're fighting to solve. Here's what we're trying to do for the better, for the good of the community and for the clients that are being served.
Is that trend among millennials reversible? We're starting to see housing purchases change as the oldest millennials get children and married and family, and they're buying the houses and they're buying the SUVs or minivans. So is the philanthropy piece of that going to change as well?
You know, I would say that that's a possibility. I think that we also have to look at it as how much information now is available relative to before. Part of the reason workplace campaigns were so successful is before 2005, really, you didn't have smartphones, the vast internet that had information for people available at their fingertips. You were educated through those speakers coming to your workplace to tell you about what's going on in the community. Now people are able to find it. So I think information has been a disruptor in a good way, and the technology in a good way, because it helps people be more educated and informed about what's going on around them. But it's still going to be about whether or not they feel like it's important to them, and whether or not they feel like there's something that they can do that would create a positive change in it. So I think that's part of the key challenge to us, is how do we educate, attract, and retain donors? And that's, to your point, I think those preferences for them can change, but we also have to be able to tell the story and help them understand why what they can do, whether it's $15 a month or $1,500 per year, why that can make a big difference in their communities.
Having had such a significant difference in donations between this last campaign and the prior campaign, the previous campaign, what are you expecting this year as you gear up again?
You know, I would say that our expectation is around the same amount that we saw last year. I would expect us to be somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million. We're at 1.8, and it's still creeping up a little bit, because one of the positive impacts of an employee matching gift kind of program like State Farm is running, for example, is that whereas before there was a 1 week, 2 week, 1 month period during which an employee could make a commitment to a particular organization or a United Way pledge, now they can do it year round. And so that's one of the things that we're trying to do to increase the probabilities that we will have a stronger campaign than we had in this most recent year. We've started doing some very aggressive digital marketing as well as social media to try and create that push. We're kind of drilling down to a concept that we're calling 180 United. And if you visit 180united.org, you can learn a little bit more about what's going on there. And kind of the premise behind that, for example, Charlie, is, you know, in life, a 180 typically signifies some change in direction. You know, you say, oh, that person did a 180. And what we're trying to highlight are positive 180s. But we're also trying to get at the fact that you don't have to give large amounts of money to make a meaningful difference. So we saw a 1.7 million drop in the revenue year over year. If in the next 3 years we can get 5,000 donors to contribute just $15 per month, we would make up more than half of that, because that equals $15 a month equals 180. And so we're trying to, you talk about the immediacy, we're trying to get at that Netflix style subscription, if you will, to philanthropy, where, hey, for a small bit each month, you can make an investment in your community that's going to have a big impact. And what we're trying to do through that that website is to highlight positive 180s that are going on in the community and how people can get connected with that.
You know, each new wrinkle in philanthropy can draw attention and can attract some loyalty from civic-minded people, community-minded people, generous people. But whether it's this sort of subscription model, or whether it's a call-in, or whether it's a business campaign, each method of reaching people and attracting their contribution to good things only lasts so long.
Correct.
How long is the life cycle for this sort of sustaining subscription going to be, do you
well,
think?
Well, and that's why we're looking at smaller incremental donations that are on a debit or credit card that would just be like people that sign up for Amazon Prime or Netflix or something like that. That I think one of the key challenges these days, too, is you talked a little bit about millennials buying houses, SUVs. I think that both the millennials and Generation X, I guess you would call it, are much more mobile, not just geographically, but also within workplaces. When you think of the baby boomers and that generation, they would go to work at one particular company, and they would very likely they were going to stay there for 30 years or more. I think now you're seeing more movement between workplaces without them ever leaving Bloomington Normal or McLean County, for example. And as a result, when each time they move, given our current model, or at least the traditional model of workplace campaigns, we may lose that connection. And so by trying to, one, encourage repeated small donations that's on their debit or credit card, and number two, you know, doing it outside of the workplace, we're hoping to maintain those connections for a longer period of time and make it in a way where it's kind of like a savings program or a 401k, where it's small incremental things, but you forget about it. But over time, it adds up to quite a bit of an impact.